You are listening to The Tie.
I am Joe McDonald.
Sean Carter.
Brentley Romine.
DJ Pihowski.
Wright Thompson, and you're listening to The Tie Podcast.
The Tie.
The Tie Podcast.
The Tie.
Thank you for listening to The Tie.
Thank you for listening to The Tie.
I'm Dottie Pepper, and thank you for listening to The Tie.
Mr. Jordan Spieth.
He's won like 11 Masters at this point.
So that's what I was about to say. It's like, he, you know, you can say what you want. I think as you say that, we're on the same page. Like, the man has two green jackets. Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Tie. My name is Henry Schimpf, and today I am joined by Tron Carter from No Laying Up. TC and I today are here for a very serious episode to talk about how many majors do certain PGA Tour players truly have, PGA or LIV players, that is. You know, just because someone has three majors, when you really think about the value of a Masters versus a PGA versus a US Open versus a British Open, and then depending on the level of competition, the course that week, all sorts of different inputs, all majors are not truly created equal. And so just because a player has X number of majors, it does not mean that's the intrinsic value of what they have. As you can tell, this is a very, very serious topic. In fact, TC and I went a full 2 hours nearly talking about this. So we hope that you'll stay around for the whole thing. Let us know if you enjoy this episode. Thank you for being here as always. And without further ado, let's get to the episode. TC, welcome back to The Tie. Excited to have you here for the second time. How's everything going?
Hey, Henry. Good. Thanks for having me back. Always nice to come on a pod for the second time. Means you were, you know, not terrible the first time. So
yeah, it means people enjoyed things.
Yeah, good. Things are good down here in Florida. Just kind of hot and rainy right now. And getting over my annual fall sinus infection. So, but yeah, otherwise, golf season's about to start up down here.
Totally. Yeah, it's been kind of the same in Texas. We've made it out of the like horribly hot season, but now it like thunderstorms every evening, which I actually kind of like. Like you're sitting in your room at 8 p.m. and see the lightning outside. It's not too bad. I'll take that as a trade-off for it being like 107 every day. So could be worse.
Totally. I'm a big thunderstorm guy. It just kind of clears everything out. It cools it off, and it's like the whole audio visual experience.
Yes, too. Exactly.
So
we'll get to the pod here in a moment. We're talking the intrinsic value of majors today. And this is certainly something you guys have touched on here and there, but I talk about it a lot when I was in college. I talked about it with my teammates that, you know, kind of anecdotally you say, well, the Masters holds more credence than the PGA or what have you, depending on who you are. But I want to get beyond the concept of credence and actually like put some real numbers on this. I mean, there's a difference between certain majors, and we're going to actually go through and quantify certain players. We've got 10 of them. We'll see how many we can work through here. But before we do that, we have decided at The Tie that we're extending the dirt beyond Mudball Monday, and we're going to be asking all of our guests, and I couldn't think of a better person to start with than yourself. So TC, what have you been drinking, eating, reading, and thinking over the last week or two?
Oh gosh. Over the last week or two. Let's see here. Actually, I'll give a shout out. I was up in New Jersey with my brother's in-laws. We were up at the Simpson Cup, which is a disabled kind of veteran, kind of like a Ryder Cup competition up there, golf. It was at Baltusrol, but we were staying at Neil's in-laws' place. And they made the best orzo and lemon chicken the other night. It was crazy. So I'm gonna try to recreate that tonight. And yeah, just kind of that weird time of the year, right, where you don't really know. I'm kind of tired of grilling out. I'm tired of just doing, you know, burgers and steaks and brats, and it's hot, so I want stuff that's a little bit light and airy. So just been making a lot of, like, you know, fruit salads and you know, kind of lighter summery stuff, a lot of fish. So that's kind of what I've been eating. And then tomatoes too, trying to find good farmers markets and get good tomatoes at this time of year. Drinking wise, they finally the store by our house just picked up Bell's Oberon, which good Michigan kind of a wheat ale. Not normally a big wheat ale guy, but the we were drinking that up in Michigan last year, and normally they only bring Bell's Two Hearted down here. So to see the Oberon was a nice thing. And then wine wise, drinking a lot of whites this time of year. A lot of like kind of lighter shards. Been on a shard kick lately. And reading. I'm trying to think. Randy and I have been talking about it. I have like 220 open tabs on my phone right now. So I've been trying to kind of plow through those as you know, as I can, try to get those down into single digits and get them onto reading lists or just knock them out. Best thing I read this week was probably the I think it's Vershinsky, the from Bloomberg wrote kind of a op-ed you know, post-mortem on Mikhail Gorbachev and just how ineffective he was as a leader and how you know, how much kind of undue credit he gets for ending the Cold War through almost sheer force of incompetence. So that was a really good piece in Bloomberg that I read this week. And then what was the last question? It was eating,
Thinking with
thinking.
intentional ambiguity, you can kind of go any direction.
I'm trying to just it's been the top of my mind just figuring out next year's schedule. So it's been, you know, kind of hanging over me as we start planning our event schedule, and we've got, you know, all sorts of, you know, hey, I want to go here, I want to go there. I'm headed to Korea in October, and then I've got some buddies trying to get me down to Australia in or in beginning of December for the Australian Open, and then just trying to figure out, you know, it's like next year I really want to go to New Zealand at some point, and then I really, really want to go to like Vancouver and a couple places domestically. So just trying to fit those in, prioritize them. You've got you know, you got the US Open at LACC next year. Women's Open is at Pebble next year for the first time. So just trying to like prioritize all these places I want to go with where I probably need to go and with spending enough time at home with the kiddos. So it's kind of like a 3 month puzzle I've got to wander through over the next 3 months here, but you know, to kind of set myself up for success next year.
Maybe a repurposed tea rather than thinking, traveling for yourself. There's a lot of travel coming up there. Some good
Oh
stuff.
gosh. Yeah. No, I've already made like the it's been a big year of travel this year. I've already made the like the premier 1K for United through like, you know, 8 months of the year. I think I made it through 7 months of the year. So it's they need to raise their threshold so there's less of us. So there's less people. So I think I'm actually to the point now where I'm gonna do a status match with Delta and try to make like platinum with Delta for the year too, so I can get that going. So my travels are you know, well covered regardless of where I'm going. But yeah, I mean like next few weeks we're going to Cincinnati for LPGA next week, and then week after that I'm going to Seattle, go play Chambers, and then taking my wife out there for a couple of days. And then we've got Kansas City the week after that for tournament out there. I'm gonna go see Landman when I'm out
Nice.
there as well, playing with Rob out there. And then I'm going to Aiken to film something with my mom after that. So, yeah, kind of a crazy, you know, September here to kind of cap off the year, and then it kind of shuts down a little bit, you know, in October. So,
Awesome. All right. Well, that was the realistic part of the conversation. Now let's get to intrinsic major values. And I do feel the need to preface here with anyone that takes anything seriously, we say for the next however long is probably not thinking about it the right way. But here we go. So we're coming in hot here with Philip Alfred Mikkelsen. Now the record would
so
show.
actually, one thing. Let me preface this. I threw up a little joke on Instagram earlier this week when I was out of Baltusrol and I said, hey, Jimmy Walker's alleged major victory. Jimmy Walker reached out, sent a DM over, not happy. Said, what do you mean alleged? You know, like, that's not a funny joke. Like, you know, you're being a dick, da 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 da. And I was like, hey, dude, like, it just wasn't a very exciting major. I guess it was that 2016
16
at Baltusrol. You know, A, like, I don't like the course. It wasn't a very exciting major. You know, I think there was a bunch of rain that week, and I think you beat Jason Day. And so, you know, I think some people struggle with the concept of this, right? When it's, oh, like, what do you mean it's only one major? They're all the same, that sort of thing. So those people that like, this conversation is probably not for them, right? It's a very subjective measure of majors.
Exactly. But, you know, that's what we're here for, is to get into this sort of BS. I will say, on that 16 PGA, I just remember the week being bland. And then finally, on the 72nd hole, Jason Day hit that like electric 2-iron, and I think he made eagle, to like pump some sort of life into it. And like, that was the sentiment from everybody. Like, the announcers were like, finally, like, here we go. There's something to it. Yeah. So we love Jimmy Walker. Like, nothing against Jimmy Walker. Cook me a steak, please, one of these days. But no. That's a good way to start the conversation. But anyway, so let's hop into it with six for Phil Mickelson. That's what the record would show. Three Masters, 04, 06, 2010, two PGAs, 05, 21, and then, of course, the 2013 Open Championship at Muirfield. So, initial thoughts, like, where do you go with Mickelson in terms of having Masters, a couple PGAs, what I would consider to be a great Open Championship, early gates? What do you got?
So I guess question for you is, are we counting, is it only victories that we're counting? Or, you know, let's say you're racking up a bunch of runner-ups. Are you getting any residual credit for those? It's like, hey, 10 runner-ups counts as half a victory or something like that.
I think you can definitely get residual value off of certain tournaments. For example, we'll get into it later. I mean, two of the late guys we have here are two major winners, Martin Kaymer and DJ. Like, how do we square up the Whistling Straits PGA? Does Martin Kaymer really get a full major there? How much does DJ get? You know, there's all sorts of stuff going on. So yes, you can get residual value.
Okay. All right. That's good to know. Cause I feel like with, you know, Mickelson's kind of early career, that probably forces us to evaluate that kind of accordingly. I mean, looking at his, you know, really that stretch from like 2001 to 2003, and I guess there wasn't that many, or really 04, because after he got off the snide in 04, won the Masters, he finished as runner up at the US Open, third at the Open Championship, T6 at the PGA that year. It's funny, like, he's got a lot of third place finishes on his resume where he kind of, you know, lost the plot, shot himself out of things, you know, the last few holes there. No, but I think going through, I think for me, like, Masters is probably the baseline, right? Like, a Masters counts as a full major pretty much every year. The conditions are similar. It doesn't, you know, it's the only major that doesn't really travel around. Obviously, there's a few exceptions there, like the year Zach Johnson won. I would not consider that a full major, just because, you know, it was sopping wet and he laid up on every par five, and, you know, it was just one of those. It just wasn't a normal Masters, right? You know, and I think the scores were like right around even par that year as well, but. Plus, that was like deep in the post Hootie changes, where they were just completely butchering the golf course. I think they're starting to get it back now a little bit, but yeah. So I mean, Mickelson having three Masters, you know, 04, 06, 2010, feels like three majors, right? You know, based on who he beat in those, if there's any like kind of, he beat Ernie and KJ. It was kind of a two-horse race, that first one, 04, there at the end. And then 06, he beat Tim Clark, and then kind of a host of guys at at four under. There were three back. So again, that one feels like, you know, kind of a just a full major there. And then in 2010, he beat Westwood. And then I think that was the year Anthony Kim came in third. I think that was the year Anthony Kim made like a million birdies in the final round. So, but
yeah, see, 2010 is one. Part of me wants to give him more for that. But like AK came in third, a few shots back, but it was like a late effort. He wasn't actually going to win the thing. And then as if Lee Westwood was ever going to actually win a major. So you could realistically say that whoever was in fourth place was his second best competition that week. So like,
which was Tiger.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, there we go. We got the cat up
Tiger
there.
And KJ. Yeah.
But you know, I'm just not, I'm not feeling it on that one. It was a win for the family, which is huge, but I just don't think we can go anything more than a major, maybe 1.1 or 1.2 with that. But I agree with you that I don't think the Masters victories are accumulating to rounds above three. Maybe he's got 3-3, 3-4 off of that, but it's not a rounding to four sort of situation.
So, all right. So looking at those, so I think, you know, we're in the three range for those one way or another. Looking at the next one, you've got the PGA Championship. That was his second victory, which that was at Baltusrol. So do we need to, you know, dock that one at all, the 05 PGA?
You know, I don't think that any major cannot round to one. However, you can absolutely double or triple round if you'd like. And so I think that one is in the conversation of like a 0.445 sort of situation where, you know, rounds to 0.45, rounds to 0.5, okay, give him a major. But like that was hardly a major in my opinion.
Yeah, you got Tiger. Tiger finished T4 there as well. DL3, Elkington, Bjorn in the mix there. But again, you know, like we've talked about, it's a PGA. PGA can be a little bit scattershot from year to year. It was at Baltusrol. Just a very boring, like, it's crazy at Baltusrol, the fact that there's no par fives until 17 and 18. And there's just two par fives at the end. Like, it's just such a weird routing. There's not much like soul in the golf course. I don't know. I just can't do it. So yeah, I'm going to go with 0.5 there, just cause it's a, you know, I know he did his flop shot out of the deep rough to a couple feet on the final hole, won by a shot.
You know what I would argue with that one is, as we discussed the residual value, is that, you know, the Masters in 04 finally got the monkey off of his back. The PGA, that's kind of the golf gods just giving him another one. It's like, okay, you deserve to have probably it's three like majors at this point. So I think we'll give him a half for that one, and then maybe you round all of those other runners up before to another half or so, or 0.4. And so by the time he hits that 05.
Let's just give him 1.5 for the minute. For the Masters in 04, because there's so much riding on that, and you know, the monkey on the back is so big there, and then the next one is then diminished. So it's still two majors. It's just 1.5 and 0.5.
I'm with you there.
And then the 06 Masters, that's just a full major.
That's just one.
It's just kind of a normal. I think the most interesting one here is probably. So he's got three at that point then after 06, because he goes back to back, wins PGA in 05, Masters in 06. Few lean years there. Was that when he got like kind of fat and then like the Ford logos?
Yeah. Hefty lefty. That?
Okay. Yeah. So 07, 08, 09, 2010, wins the Masters, and then couple top three finishes, 11 and 12. And then 13, he wins the Open Championship. That was just like one of my favorite Opens of maybe all time. Just the duel with Stenson at Muirfield. It was just fantastic. So I'm gonna give him two majors for that one. Just because it was so, you know, A, it's at Muirfield, And B, it's, you know, there, those are the only two guys under par for the entire event, proper major. You know, Mickelson shoots a final round 66 and, you know, wins an open championship totally, you know, out of nowhere. Like, I don't think anybody would have expected him to win an open. Although, you know, a couple years prior in 2011, that was the year, was that the year that Stenson won?
So that was 16. And that's something I wanted to talk about is,
yeah,
I mean, I agree that 13 in and of itself is a good 1.672, something like that. But is there any argument to be made that after the performance of 16, you could even push him close to the 2.5? Like, does he have three majors off of those two events? I actually saw a ranking at some point of the best major performances of all time. It was a fairly objective data set around, you know, how much you beat the next guy by, all that sort of junk. I don't remember the exact calculation on it, but Phil's 2016 Open Championship performance was like the fourth best major performance of all time, and he didn't win. And I think like the next guy on the list, the next highest performance of a non-winner was like 30th or something like that. So
yeah,
there's an argument to be made for two that just kind of squares him off. I think there's also a reasonable argument to be made that between 13 and 16, it's like three majors.
Let's see here. Okay. I like that. Cause looking back, all right. So the one I was conflating 2011 was Royal St. George when the weather was terrible. Ricky, it was like, you know, Ricky was wearing that outrageous rain suit. I'm of the mind, I'm of the mind Royal St. George doesn't count as a full major. I just don't think that's more of an aerial game, and I'm just not a huge fan. I would say 2013, let's give him Muirfield, you know, proper major there. I would give him two for that one. And then I would probably give him, I don't think we can give him a full major for 2016, but I think we can give him probably half to three quarters of a major.
Yeah, two and a half there total. So yeah, I think he's getting three off of 13 and 16, which, man, that's strong coffee, but we like strong coffee out here. So
are we doing anything with the 2013 US Open?
I don't think so. I mean, that was a hell of a tournament and I love it, but ultimately who ends up winning the thing? Justin Rose. And so I love Marion. I loved the whole tournament. If Jason Day had pulled that thing out, I think there would be more value on that one. But the fact that Rose ends up winning it, like, you can't give too much if the major is only worth one in and of itself to someone who didn't win it. And so I'm not quite buying it, but it's a good shout out. I think that was a heck of a performance. I mean, he should maybe lose value off of 06 at Wingfoot, you know, like
that was going to be my next question.
On one hand, you could say, you know, he should get a half major there. I would actually say that's a detraction. That's like minus 0.3 or something like that, because that was bird in hand and he just lost it. So yeah, maybe between those two, the way we shake it out is minus 0.3 for 06, plus 0.3 for 13 on the US Open. Everything else, maybe he just wasn't meant to win. We'll just leave it square for all those.
It's like 99. Like, you can't penalize him for that. You know, right. I think if anybody should get penalized for 99, it's Tiger. 99 at Pinehurst. Like, Tiger should have won that tournament going away. Watching the replay of that. Okay. So where does that leave us? Then I think we've netted him up like 0.5, right?
So we've netted him up two full majors so far, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah. So he has a chance, depending on where things shake out on the PGA, he's going to be around that 8 mark, which, all things considered, I'm like, that feels pretty decent. So let's get to 21, a PGA. But I'm biased towards South Carolina. I love the Ocean Course. I think that it's a great place. I love Charleston. What was he, 6 under? I mean, it was a very real major. Now, it wasn't exactly the greatest list of players at the top of the board. But man, it was a salty performance. I mean, look, be it as it may, like I was as excited about that as about any major I can think of in the last 5-10 years, other than of course the 2019 Masters. I mean, I was like on the couch ready to go when he was teeing off on Saturday, Sunday. Now, does that really mean a whole lot? Maybe, maybe not. But all things considered, being a PGA, I think it can certainly at least round to one or be close to that sort of mark.
I'm cool with that. I think I'm not a huge fan of the Ocean Course personally, but I think it's a good course for major, right? It's a proper championship test. You know, beat Brooks, beat Louis. Shane Lowry was chasing as well. You know, kind of the strong group at T8 there. But yeah, I mean, really, golf's gotten so much deeper here over the last 5-10 years. You know, he's not beating plumbers and firemen anymore. He's beating, you know, guys that show up every single major, right? So, yeah, I think I'm totally cool with that. And I also think figuring out, you know, or looking at it holistically, Phil played against the greatest player of all time for pretty much the entirety of his career. And, you know, they didn't necessarily play well in the same majors. They kind of flip-flopped back and forth based on, you know, kind of during some of Tiger's downturns, Phil kind of, you know, turned up and all that. So I think there's kind of a give and take there, but I think you got to give him a little bit of credit for, you know, going up against the best of all time. And, you know, I mean, obviously he wasn't in the same ballpark as Tiger, but nobody was, right? So I think having net, having him up above, you know, a couple, you know, one or two majors above where he otherwise would have been, or, you know, what the true record says, I think is a good thing, right? I think it reflects well upon Mickelson and the era in which he played.
Agreed. I feel good about 8. I think that's a good mark for him. King of Live, Phil Mickelson, congratulations. You have 8 majors. On we go to the 4-major mark.
Which 8 brings him up. How much, you know, where does that move him historically?
One north of Arnold. Now, you know, it's a nuanced conversation because we would have to do this with every single player.
Exactly.
But at least as the record would show, it would have him 1 north of Arnie and 1 south of Tom Watson.
Okay.
Which, you know, I can get on board with. I think that's probably about where he shakes out. So,
yeah.
All right. We've got 2 guys at 4 that we're going to hit. Should we start with Rory or Brooks?
Let's start with Brooks.
Okay. Yeah, we mentioned him a couple times. We've got 2 US Opens, obviously, 17-18, 2 PGAs, 18-19. And then what am I missing? He's got 1 other in there. Oh, that's it. That's 4. Yeah, good math. So let's start. Let's just kind of go down the line. 17 US Open. This is peculiar because I think the US Open can maybe have the largest variance.
Yeah.
Certain US Opens, I mean, we'll get there. To me, like DJ at Oakmont, like that's a lot of majors.
That's worth like 3 majors.
Other US Opens, like, It was well contested, but just with everything that went into the week, like the year before, 15 with Spieth, like not a ton of value there in my mind. 14 with Martin Keimer, we'll get there as well. Wins by 8 shots. I mean, it's just not that much. But I would say 17. Aaron Hills is solid, but I mean, I think he was 17 under par. He won by 3.
He was 16 under. Yeah,
16. Who was second? Brian Harman.
One by 4. Harman and Matsuyama. Fleetwood, 4th, and then Fowler, Haas, Schauffele, 5th at minus 10. So, 4-shot margin of victory. Shot 67 in the final round. You know, I thought they butchered the setup a little bit out there. The wind didn't blow, obviously. I'd like to see Aaron Hills get another shot. You know, I think that was the week that, Nah was bitching about the rough on, like, Tuesday or, you know, Monday or Tuesday. And then they
certainly checks
they
out.
Cut it. Yeah, they cut it down, widened the corridors, all that. So, yeah, I struggle a little bit with this one. I like Aaron Hills, but at the end of the day, this didn't feel like a U.S. Open, right? And, you know, I don't think that's a stain on Aaron Hills. I think it's just it's more of the circumstances of that week. So, I could be talked into going 0.75 here.
Well, let's push to 2018 and see where the two shake out, because we have two very differing majors there, with 17 is south of one for sure, and 18 to me is definitely north of one, but I don't know where exactly it shakes out. So you almost have like two separate camps. It's like, how many US Opens do, or how many majors does he have off those two Opens, and then how many does he have off the PGAs? So let's go to 18. Shinnecock, obviously just incredible golf course, baked out. You know, you had the Sunday 63 by Fleetwood to give a little bit of a scare to Brooks. I mean, it was a heck of a major. You have the legendary ZJ quote, you know, they lost the golf course, which that quote in and of itself to me adds at least something to the week. And that was like, that was peak Brooks, I think. Just the physique, the way that he went around that golf course, it was great stuff. So I'd like to hear what you think, but I can certainly get on board with quite a bit of value there.
Yeah, he shot 72 that Saturday, where, you know, Fleetwood shot 78, DJ shot 77. Although I will say, Big Tone and Berger shot 66 on Saturday. So could it have been, you know, maybe they were out a little bit earlier there. But where I struggle a little bit here too is how they set up the golf course on Sunday. I thought that was a complete disgrace, the way that Mike Davis and the gang just got completely back down and like basically yo-yoing back and forth, right? I was struggling with that a lot, where, you know, you've got one of the harder days in US Open, you know, recent memory, and then all of a sudden they dial back for Sunday, and it's like a turkey shoot. You know, and that's where, I don't know, I just can't, I hate that. It should be ramping up all the way to Sunday, you know, getting kind of progressively harder, especially when they kind of widened the corridors and took away some of the long rough around greens and more short grass around greens. It's like, you got to commit to the setup, right? So, I don't know. It just, that one feels like a major to me. It feels like one major based upon, you know, kind of the way that they I think it would have been a lot more interesting had he had to hang on in difficult conditions versus just kind of coast in with a 68 that Sunday.
I can get behind that. I don't think that there's no argument to be made in my mind that we're rounding anything outside of two, be it, you know, 1.25 for Shinnecock and 0.75 for Aaron Hills, or 1.4 for one and 0.8 for the other. Like, to me, it's going to round down to two or be right around two. So I think, I'm square with just two US Opens, you know, strong performance back to back. That was great stuff, but not a whole lot more. Now, it's almost more interesting when we talk about the PGAs, because 18 was just a disgrace of a golf course at Belrive. Just painful. You had some guys up at the top of that board that didn't really do a lot for me. But lo and behold, you had a Sunday 64 from Cat. And so solely because of that, all of the other junk put into it, it's a PGA. It was a terrible golf course. It was hot as anything. I mean, Cat was out there like changing his shirt every three holes, putting without the Scotty. He had that like funky saber-tooth sort of TaylorMade going and making a run at it. It adds value, but then where does it actually sit? Because part of me, as a huge Tiger guy, like everybody, is just like perpetually furious with Brooks for not letting Tiger win that one. So
this one to me, Brooks shot 66. This is the ultimate everybody who's pro Belrive is like, well, look at the leaderboard. Like, it's, you know, it was such a good golf tournament. I'm like, yeah, it's a major. Like, the best players in the world are teeing it up against each other, you know, playing for a big ass trophy. I'm with you. I mean, great leaderboard, but this could have been a WGC, right? This is, to me, this was like the Amex WGC that they canceled, that was supposed to happen the week after 9/11. This is making up for that. So I'm almost in the mind, we don't award any major for this one.
You know what? I can do it because I'm still, as I finished with there, I'm so disappointed that he didn't let Kat win that one. Now, it's tough because it's like, okay, say Tiger wins that one. Does he win the Masters in 19? Like, was that ultimately Tiger's ability to then get back at Brooks and beat him in that 2019 Masters? It's really
fueled the fire.
It's really complex. Yeah. And so, yeah, like, had Tiger not won the 19 Masters, 100%, I'm totally down with no major. But with him winning the 19 Masters, it's tough.
All right, so let's
go to 19.
We go Brooks. So maybe we go Brooks 0.25 for this one and 0.25 for Shinnecock or 0.5 for Shinnecock. You know, okay. or like 0.75. And so those two add up to one major.
Okay.
They're both flawed.
Yeah, I can get behind that. So now he's sitting at 2.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go ahead and go to 19. Bethpage Black. You know, good golf course. First PGA in May, which I think that there's something to be said for. DJ just completely coughed that one up. And, you know, we'll get to DJ. That's going to be a complex conversation around how many majors he should have won. You know, just in and of itself, like, totally losing value for the outfit on Sunday. That Nike hat coming down with sideways.
So bad.
One of the worst shirts I've ever seen. You know, it just, I think what screams fake major to me to some degree is the fact that you had, you know, Varner was like in the lead or up near it and shot what, like 83 on Sunday. There were just guys that were up there that didn't really have business being there. So at face value to me, there's not a ton of value on this 19 PGA at Bethpage.
Yeah. It's tough when you've got, you know, Jazz, Janna Watanand, you know, tied for second heading into the final round. You mentioned Varner. Otherwise, good leaderboard. I'm not a huge fan of Bethpage. Greens are too flat for me. It just feels like kind of one note, right? There's just a lot of like straight long par fours, tall grass everywhere, raised greens. You know, but again, I think this was a pretty stout major, like the final leaderboard, great. Brooks kind of limped home a little bit, 70-74 on the weekend, still won by two. But I think the context of it, you know, looking at it in the context of his year, that year in 2019, so he's coming off of, you know, two majors in 2018, and then he finishes T2 at the Masters, wins the PGA, solo second at Pebble, to Woodland at the US Open, and then T4 at the Open Championship at St. Andrews, which I believe that was the one where he told the rules official, you know, I think the rules official said, you know, you must address me as a sir, you know.
Would that have been Portrush in 19?
Oh, was that Portrush in 19? Okay.
Yeah, that's the one Lowry run, right?
Oh, you're right. Okay, you're right.
But he was kind of right there. He was in the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. No, so I think there's, you know, that's a damn good major year. I think, you know, it's probably knock it a little bit for being a PGA, being a little bit of a, just, I don't know, not my favorite golf course. But net him up a little bit for the rest of the year, and you just give him one major for that one.
I like that. So I think that we shook out right around two majors for his first three, and then one major for that final one, kind of a body of work sort of conversation. He was putting in good work those couple years. Three feels about right. A fake-ish U.S. Open, a strong U.S. Open that had its nuance, and then two PGAs. Four goes to three. We round him down slightly. Thanks for playing, Brooks. You know, he's got a chance every. He's got a chance like every week now playing Live Tour. I mean, guys are getting chills out there, so those are majors.
And he's just kind of a dick, right? Like, I don't really feel anything when he wins a major, so it's kind of reflective of how I feel as well.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, there's this argument that he only cares about the majors. To me, it almost like devalues the majors in my mind. Like the way he looks at them, he's like, yeah, these are the only golf tournaments that I play for. Like, it's like, well, do you care that much more about them? Or are those like the only golf tournaments that are even of any value to you? And so it's like nothing actually matters. And so I'm not a Brooks guy. I'm not really into him. So we'll give him three majors. Rory, four on the record.
This is going to be tough because I think I'm a massive, massive Rory guy, huge fan. But like, as I've said many times, I have some issues with some of the places and the conditions during which he won majors. So,
and there's also so much complexity around basically just, to use Kat's phrase, boat racing everybody at his first couple majors. So 2011 congressional, coming off of just the total craziness of the Masters where he shot a million on the back nine, wins by eight, I believe, at, you know, just for my money, a disgrace of a golf course, for a US Open.
Yes.
Same deal at the PGA, wins, I think it was eight again at the Ocean course. Let's start with those two.
Kind of an interesting deal as well. Like, he's coming off of, he missed out on the playoff at, like in 2010, he's finishes, you know, I think third at St. Andrews 2010, and then goes to Whistling Straits for the last major of the year, finishes one out of a playoff, played the back nine in even par. And, you know, kind of a tough bogey on 14 there to miss the playoff by one. Infamous Keimer, you know, Watson, and then, you know, DJ's kind of meltdown there on 18. So, yeah, I think that's definitely a, you know, kind of some context heading into his 2011, you know, tour de force at Congo. I think Congo, I'm with you. I think it's, you know, I haven't been there since the redo. Solly was up there for the KPMG this year. It's a little bit, to me, it looks a little bit like lipstick on a pig, the renovation, but, you know, I imagine it's better than it was. But that was just, it was long, it was wet. He's hitting driver everywhere, which, you know, good for him. Like, he got rewarded for being the best driver in the field. Wins by eight over Jason Day, Kevin Chappell, Robert Garrigues, Lee Westwood, Y.E. Yang, rounding out the top five there. Yeah, I struggle with this one, man. This one's like, when I think about majors that just suck to watch, and just, this is right up there with it. I'm going to give this a half major.
I'm going to make the argument that overall that week, that major in and of itself was like a half. There was very little value there. However,
yeah,
you talk about everything that led up to it, his performance at the Masters, you know, 2010 Open Championship. It felt like a week that was just contrived. Like, he was destined to win that major. Like, as soon as the Masters happened, it was time for him to just go ahead and toss one on the board. Like, everything built up to that.
And he did it. The pressure was on. He went out and did it.
Yeah. I think it's okay. Just that puts him at a single major. Again, that week actually was only like half of that, but just everything that led up to it, it's like, you know what, dude, you've got one major now, you know?
Can we give him like 0.9?
Sure.
Like, yeah. It's not like where he's still got to go out and validate it after that, but, you know, it's not a full major, but it's like, all right, like, if you go out and validate this, we'll give you a little bit more than one major on the next one.
Yeah, no, I feel you there. I feel you. Okay, so we've got him at about 0.9. We go to Kiawa Island.
I mean, he kind of goes into a tailspin a little bit, right? He's no top 20s in majors for the next five after that, in 2011, 2012. Misses the cut at the U.S. Open the following year in his title defense. And then we go to Kiawa.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm a fan of the golf course. I don't love the fact that he went around like a windy golf course. And that was like back in the D2 days when he was hitting his driver at a 150-foot apex. And like, that's just kind of not really how things are supposed to work. He started just dropping absolute bombs. He was using the fastback putter back then, which was kind of electric. So I don't know. I struggle with this one. Like, I don't think it's like a triple rounding PGA. It's not that bad. But there's some serious rounding going on to get him up to one. I'm putting this in the ballpark of like 0.6, something like that.
I was going to say 0.6 or 0.7. I mean, I think you got to give him props for winning by 8. Like David Lynn, -5, Keegan, hot Carl Pedersen, Poulter, Team Rose at -4, and then Tiger at -2. So, you know, 67, 66 on the weekend, by far the best score on the weekend. Kind of overcame a second round 75 there in some conditions. Wins by 8. I mean, that's pretty heady stuff. I would give him like a 0.7.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think I need to add a whole lot more there. I think 0.9 or so for the first one, 0.7 there. He's rounding to 2, but you know, the intrinsic value is a little south of what the record would show at that point. So now we go on to 14 and
goes into a tailspin again in 13. Yeah. You know, T25 at the Masters, T41 at the US Open, misses the cut at the British Open, and then T8 at the PGA Championship there in 13, T8 at the Masters in 14, T23 at the US Open. So it's kind of like, you know, Rory, like, where's the consistency, man? It's like, you know, up and down, you know, and you gotta kind of validate one of these with a top 10 at the next one, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. So it's hard to figure out like compared to a guy like Mickelson, where it's like, okay, well, you won this major and maybe it wasn't the biggest major to have won, but like the body of work over the entire year, kind of what we were talking about with Brooks, it's like, that validates it as a full major. Whereas with Rory, it kind of feels like it's these one-off performances. And in some ways it almost makes our job easier here because you can just take that week in and of itself as a microcosm and say, okay, what actually happened? So 2014 Open Championship, Hoylake, you know, it was a fun week. Like I remember the Saturday back-to-back eagles to finish. I believe it was Saturday, you know, they changed the routing for the Open there. Now they're both like driver 6-iron sort of par 5. So that is what it is. I think Hoylake's a cool golf course. I went to the 19 Walker Cup there. I think it's a course that gets a bit of a bad rap when you walk it. I think it's actually pretty neat. I mean, it's maybe not the best one in the Rota, but it's probably better than people give it credit for.
I'm with you. I think I like Hoylake. I love the internal OB on that. Yeah. I think they play it as the third hole during the tournament or the fourth hole, but that first hole kind of, you know, in the regular routing where you get the internal OB up the right with the range, kind of flattish greens until you get out to like 6 or 7 there, and then you get, you know, like 5 or 6 holes along the coast there. I'm curious to see it go back next year to Hoylake because they've added that new par 3 in there as well. You know, so there's a little bit of like all the holes don't necessarily match one another. But there's a lot more going on than meets the eye. It's better. I agree with you. It's better walking around it in person than it is on camera. I think this one, like the conditions were pretty placid all week. It was pretty, especially on the weekend. I think there were some big storms like Saturday night, and then Sunday was like a total absence of wind. You know, where guys are shooting like Shane Lowry shot 65, Leish, Furyk both shot 65 final round. So, you know, a little bit toothless that week as far as, you know, as far as the golf course goes, and nothing like the year, what was the year Tiger went around there, like, and just straight up didn't hit driver.
06. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just and like, iconic. You know, iconic.
Yeah. And there's like poofs of dust coming up, you know, every time somebody hits hits an iron out of the fairway. So, you know, kind of a far cry from that, but, you know, I always respect it when somebody goes out and shoots like 66, 60, like really, really good, like, you know, comes out of the gates just firing and builds themselves a lead and then has to, you know, maintain that and guard that all weekend. I've got some respect for that. And Rory certainly, and looking at the first round, He was first round leader over Matteo Manassero, but Furyk, Sergio Brooks, Shane Lowry, the Molinari brothers, Adam Scott, all at 4 under. Then he goes out, shoots another 66, goes to minus 12 through two rounds. 4 shot leader for Dustin Johnson. Again, Ricky, Sergio Molinari, Oosthuizen, Ryan Moore, and then takes his lead to 6 shots after the third round. So I'm going to call this just one major, right? I think it's just a stock major, right? It's like, this is kind of Rory's first, all right, you're getting a full major for this. You went out and got it, and good golf course, and that's that, right?
I don't have a whole lot more to add. I think that was a solid major. Another thing that I think was salty from that week is, you know, his dad, Jerry McIlroy, had the bet that he was going to win the Open Championship before he turned 26. And if I'm not mistaken, he was 25 that year. So that was his last opportunity to do it. Made his dad a pretty coin off of that one. Yeah, a full major. Solid work there. Finally, we have the 14 PGA. Frankly, I don't know what to do with this one. You know, you had Mickelson griping about the play up on the last hole with the light going down. This was like peak. So it was like peak dark days, Rory, for me. He was like ripping bicep curls every morning, you know, decided that he was like this huge weightlifter, kind of the like, you know, I hate everybody, I'm just out here to win sort of vibe, which is like, it was killer, Rory, which these days we kind of want more of. But it's also like the total antithesis of why we love Rory, I think is fair to say. So I'm at a bit of a loss of what to do with this one. I mean, you know, my inkling is to say, well, it's a PGA, it's a shitty golf course, you know.
Yeah, we're at Valhalla.
It's maybe not a triple rounder, but a double rounder. But I'm curious to hear how you feel about the week.
Yeah, this one's tough because it's, you know, he goes out, he's got 4 rounds in the 60s. As a lot of the guys in the field did. I mean, the top, you know, top three guys, Rory, Mickelson, Ricky, all shot 4 rounds in the 60s. Rory shoots 66, 67, 67, 68. This is kind of like that. It kind of typifies that era of PGAs from like the late 2000s into, you know, early 2010s. It's like that, you know, and it's kind of a vestige of that, which I'm curious to see what happens when they go back there. You know, Valhalla is just, it's kind of tricky, right? Because it's all about making birdies. You still got to go out and do it, but it just doesn't seem like the margins are quite as thin. You got a lot of par fives. I will say, like, Rory gave 2 shots away early in the front nine. You know, he was 2 back. Through 6 holes on the last round, and then really makes an eagle at 10 and kind of jumps, you know, catapults into the mix there. And then, you know, I think people can complain about it, but the play up on 18, that was just an absolute alpha move, and I respected the hell out of that. It was a total FU, total, hey, we're finishing this. And you know, but like, I don't think in a disrespectful way, it was more like, hey, PGA of America, like, handle your business. Like, we need to get this final round started earlier. Like, you shouldn't be running into freaking, you know, light delays here. I can't remember if there was a, you know, a weather delay or something during the final round, but yeah, just kind of a strange deal. But yeah, I mean, he just went out and like alphaed his way into it. He didn't play, like, he was 1 under on his last 5 or 6 holes.
The 3 wood on like 11 or 12 that ended up netting him an eagle. Still one of the great mysteries of the game of golf, but you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's just, I feel like that one, I struggle with this one too, because it's, you got everything kind of counting against him here with the course and everything, but strong, you know, strong cast of characters. He goes out and gets it done. I think kind of the usual PGA is like a 0.75. I'm willing to give him that, maybe net him up a little bit more, like 0.85.
So let's go here. I think that we landed on the first couple, putting him right around 1.5. We then said he was at a square one major for the third one at the Open Championship. It's going to take a full major for him to round to four, but we did kind of have that clause in his first US Open win that by validating, he can get a little bit more value there. So what I would say is we push him up into the neighborhood of like 1.25 off of that first win. He then gets to right around two with the win at the PGA. He gets a full major at Hoylake. And then finally, you know, 0.6, 0.7 for this final win. Because to me, Rory is like a bang on four major sort of guy. Like, I can't put him at the same line as Brooks. I mean, he's just done more in majors than Brooks has. And so
we had Brooks at three, right?
We had Brooks at three. So I feel like
we put Rory at like 3.5, though. I feel like we do need to dock him for Congressional, for Valhalla, for, you know, a little bit of the Kiowa. Like, there's just, it's not like he's gone out and won these at Oakmont and, you know.
I think it's a round to four, but I do think he should get to the four line. So that's kind of how I feel, is we, you know, pull the claws on the first one, netting up a little bit, so that then we can keep him around 0.7 for that final one. And yeah, 3.5, 3.6, but something that pushes him up to four. That feels, Rory feels like he's about where he should be, something like that.
Okay. I can get down with that.
All right. Four for Rory. So we've got Jordan and Harrington, Padraig Harrington at the three line. Should we start with Harrington? I think he's a really interesting one.
Yeah. Yeah, let's do that.
So 07 British Open, Carnoustie. Great golf course to me. I mean, and especially for major championships. Now, the complexity of it is Sergio. That was his hottest competition. Kind of a Lee Westwood sort of situation. Now, of course, Sergio does end up going and grabbing the 17 Masters over Justin Rose. So that is what it is. But like back in those days, you can kind of ask the question, like, was Sergio ever actually going to win that major? So in essence, you could say, was Harrington actually in any sort of competition? However, you know, a British Open at a great golf course like Carnoustie, to me, it's right around that one mark. You know, it can round up. It can, I don't think it necessarily needs to round down, but that felt about like a single major to me.
I agree. I think I echo all your sentiments about Carnoustie. Sergio shot 73 in the final round. You know, kind of leaked oil coming in, although Padraig doubled 18 in the final round to, you know, kind of limp into the clubhouse, although 18's. He eagled 14 and then doubled 18, but shot 67 final round, which, you know, around Carnoustie in tournament conditions, crazy. Richard Green and Hunter Mahan, 64, 65 final round. Ben Curtis, 65 in the final round. So kind of a wide dispersion of scores there. But yeah, I think that's a single major, right? I think Sergio did what Sergio was prone to do at that point. Like Sergio had it to get to minus 10 after three holes during the final round. So, you know, you're 57 holes into the championship. Sergio's minus 10, Harrington's at minus four. So Harrington's six shots back with 15 holes to play, and, you know, ends up getting it to minus nine after 14th hole. And so, yeah, so I think you got to give him credit for not counting himself out and just keeping the pedal down. And yeah, full major for me.
I like that. I don't think there's a whole lot more to discuss there. That was a solid one. Now, 2008. So there's a lot going on here. Royal Birkdale, just,
I love Birkdale.
Hell of a golf course.
Yeah.
Now let me read the top 10 real quick in order. Padraig Harrington, Ian Poulter, Greg Norman, Henrik Stenson, Jim Furyk, Chris Wood, Robert Allaby, Stephen Ames, Paul Casey, Ben Curtis, Ernie Els, something D. Howell. I do not know who that is. Robert Carlson as an amateur, Anthony Kim,
David
and Steve
Howell.
Stricker. David Howell.
David Howell was a good player, yeah.
So 15 guys. There's a big bunch at T7 there. Now, almost more importantly, let me read the scores, okay?
Yeah.
Plus three Padraig Harrington wins at. Second place, Ian Poulter, plus 7. T3, Greg Norman, Henrik Stenson, plus 9. T5, plus 10. T7, plus 12. A top 10 in a major in 2008 at plus 12. That's the stuff of dreams right there. Only five guys would break par in the final round. You had a par 70, you had a 68, and 469s. Excuse me, six guys. There was a 67 out of David Howell. But I mean, this is a serious golf course. Greg Norman shot 77 in the final round and tied for third. So a four shot win, a real golf course. I remember him like, did he maybe go like eagle eagle on 16 and 17? He hit an unbelievable three wood on one of those holes and basically just went out and took this thing late in the game. Now he wins it over Ian Poulter and Greg Norman. I mean, just, you know, solid live stuff these days. So there's there's a ton going on.
Birdied 15 and then eagled 17, which those are strong. And then par on 18, strong as well. If I remember correctly, it was crazy windy. Like the conditions sucked, at least on Saturday. And you got to factor in, which I don't know if we give Brooks proper credit, hand up on that. Like, defending a title is really, really difficult, right?
It is.
Especially when it's at another venue that doesn't necessarily suit your game the same way. I think Harrington came in with some sort of wrist injury for this one. So, yeah, I would say, you know, you get a little escalator or a little bump for that, right?
I think so, too. I think so. It feels right around one to me with the defense, real golf course, all of those things. The final thing I will throw in for you is Greg Norman led by two shots at, I should have his age on hand. He was old at that point.
Yeah.
It was well past his prime. We know that. 12 years after the 96 Masters. But Greg Norman led by two shots going into the final
53.
Round. He was 53 years old. So like, how do we situate that? Because obviously he was never, ever, ever going to win that tournament. So you can kind of just wipe him right off the board and say that it's one fewer guy that Harrington had to pass. That actually puts Harrington at second going into the final round. So he, in essence, held the lead. But he wins it by four. Great golf course. I mean, just, I wish we could have a major leaderboard like that these days where three over wins and plus 10 is a top five. So all things considered, it's somewhere in that range of one to me, give or take 0.2, something like that.
I'm keen to net it up to like 1.1 or 1.2. Just, I think Birkdale is probably, in my opinion, it's probably the best test of golf of all the Rota venues. I think, you know, St. Andrews is probably my favorite to see it at. I love Wyndham, but I think Birkdale, with all the, you know, there's a lot of hilliness and up and down and cool par threes and great par fives. I think just a stout test of golf. So, you know, between that, between defending, between it being set up as a proper major, four shot victory, you know, all that, I think, you know, I'm willing to, I mean, shit, AK was on the board. He was T5. You know, going into it, he finished T7 at plus 12. I mean, the cut was plus 9.
It's just fantastic.
I think this is like a 1.2 for me.
I'm with it. Okay. Last one, 2008 PGA. You know, there's some different things. I think this is like the dark days of the PGA. Oakland Hills. Now, it looks fantastic post redo, but I played a tournament there in 16. It had lost a lot of charm through the years.
Did you play the USAM there?
I did, yeah.
Okay.
You have to take some value off of this one for the fist pump on 18. Maybe one of the worst fist pumps I have ever seen. And it kind of felt like, you know, there's like the 2011 US Open where it's like Rory was set in stone to win this one. The 2008 PGA felt like the total antithesis of this, where it's like, dude, you just won two British Opens and now you're actually going to go win another one. It was the full blown, like there is zero chance you're ever going to get another major, but he did kind of go out and take it. So I'm not doing anything more than about 0.6 for this one. for a myriad of reasons, but realistically, with him being at one for the first British Open, 1.1 or two, like the hay's kind of in the barn on where he's going to sit. He's going to be a three major guy. It's just kind of where does the rounding come from?
Yeah, interesting. It's weird. Like looking through 07, 08, this is kind of like the dark days, right? Kind of this weird time period. Harrington goes on this absolute heater. And then looking at these leaderboards, you know, 07 and 08 Open Championship and then 08 PGA, Ben Curtis, just like this mid-career renaissance, finishes T2 at Oakland Hills in 08. So, yeah, this is one I don't really remember watching that much of this tournament. So, you know, I don't know if we should even – it's like when Duffner won at Oak Hill. I just didn't like really watch that much of that one. So kind of like, you know, I almost like kind of ding it a little bit in my head just because it just didn't really captivate me that much. Again, you've got Sergio on the board here as well. You got Stenson, Charlie Wee, JB Holmes. I mean, I think the JB Holmes shoots eight over in the final round, where from, you know, shot, he was one under going into Sunday and then finishes plus 10. You know, just a strange major. Harrington wins by two, you know, pars the last two holes. Curtis pars the last two holes. It's just really, yeah, I would say like it's like a stock PGA, right? Maybe a .6, .75, something like that.
Something like that. And yeah, that's kind of where I fall is like, it's not even really worth conversation at this point because it's not going to change his total value. He's going to be at the 2.8, 3-ish line, you know, something like that. So Harrington, three majors, kind of amazing. It does bear mentioning that those last two were catalysts, you know, the 08, 08 British and the PGA, but nonetheless, it doesn't quite change much for me. He's a three major guy, you know, how he did that, I still am a little bit confused by, but I like Padraig. He's a super interesting guy. I think he'd be an unbelievable podcast guest. You would have to ask one question and he'd probably talk for the next 3 hours.
So, I think we should do a retroactive, you know, like let's bring him down to 2.6 just because 2.6 around the catalyst. Three still.
Yeah.
Because of the catalyst thing.
Yeah.
There's a certain psychology that goes into knowing that he's not in the field. You know?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So three majors. Okay. This is a good one. Mr. Jordan Spieth. We start with the Masters.
He's won like 11 Masters at this point.
So that's what I was about to say. It's like, he, you know, you can say what you want. I think as you say that, we're on the same page. Like, the man has two green jackets, you know, like now one of them is like maybe kind of super tight and he wears it underneath the one that he actually has. But like, he has two green jackets. Now 15 is the one that we actually get to show for. But between, you know, 14, I mean, at like 20 years old, making a great run against Bubba, I think his strokes gained tee to green that week was probably like negative 75. I don't remember him like hitting a single green, but he still almost won the thing. Obviously 16, he was right there to do it again. And then freaking Danny Willett. I think people forget that like 17, he like almost shot 62 on Sunday and was right there making a run at it. So he has two green jackets. I don't know how exactly you want to square that up, but 15 was kind of one of those reckonings, right? Like, makes the great run in 14. It was just completely time for him to win a major. And that's when he did it. But that's kind of how I feel about at least his Masters record.
Yeah. I'm, you know, beats Mickelson, Rose, McIlroy, Hideki, the year that he gets it done. I'm willing to give him like two, like just shy of two Masters.
Yeah.
Like, I think for, you know, it's like a lifetime achievement award. People are going to get all over us for this. Say we're Spieth homers and all that. But between 14, 16, 18, 21, you know, I think, and then all the fluky shit that happened with Willett in 16, I think there's, I'm fine giving him like 1.5 to 1.75 Masters.
I'm down with the higher end of that spectrum. 1.75. That feels about okay. Right to me. Okay. Straight to the next major, the US Open at Chambers Bay. Now, I think this is where, you know, you give a ton of value to the Masters and then we kind of pull back on them a little bit here. So a lot to talk about. The golf course. Now, Chambers, let's throw this out there. I think Chambers today, like, that's high on my list of places to go play. It looks freaking awesome. I think they've gotten the green squared away. I mean, unbelievable setting for golf. I love the story behind it and kind of what they bring to that part of Washington. I don't know if you've been up there before.
I love it.
I think Chambers is great. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a huge, huge proponent of it. Granted, you know, I've only played it 2 years ago now. Didn't really know what to think going in. I was absolutely blown away by the place. Played it like 3 times in 2 days. And but you know, obviously these were different greens at that point. Right. So I think there's something to be said there. But you know, I think the leaderboard kind of speaks for itself too, right? You've got DJ, Oosthuizen, Brandon Grace with the infamous train shot there, Adam Scott, Cam Smith, Schwartzel, Day, Snedeker, Lowry, McIlroy, like a lot of guys that know how to play real golf.
Those are golfers. You know, like those are real golfers.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great shout out because I was definitely trending low on this one. No, you know, DJ completely coughs the thing up. We were deprived of what could have been our last 18-hole playoff ever, which is really disappointing. But that was also an iconic miss by DJ. It was also an iconic first week for Fox. I mean, just tragically bad coverage. but you know, I mean, look, I keep throwing in the word iconic, and there's something to be said for that. So I think it's like, I don't know if it's a full one, but it's really close to it, is kind of how I feel. Like it's probably between 0.75 and 1, somewhere in there for me.
Yeah, it would have been like a really good PGA Championship. Right. Yeah. It didn't feel quite like a US Open. You know, DJ three putting 18 after that just unbelievable shot. But then again, like Spieth birdies 18. But doubled 17 as well, right? So you gotta kinda, you know, he tried to kind of cough it up as well. So I'm willing to, I think it's like a 0.9, right? Because yeah. I think they're all playing the same golf course. You know, you got to hit real golf shots out there. You got to play with imagination. I think it's like a 0.9.
Okay. I feel good about that. So that puts us at about 2.65, 2.7 off of his first two majors. So back to Royal Birkdale for the 2017 Open Championship. A peculiar Jordan Spieth and Matt Kuchar battle. Now, I remember, I don't know what tournament it was, but I was competing in something while this was going on, so I didn't get to watch it. But remember just coming off the golf course on Sunday, hearing like, you cannot believe what you just missed. Just the incredible comeback from Spieth. Of course, the debacle at 13 with Greller. I mean, this is just like, this is peak Spieth and Greller. Now, I'm just going to go ahead and say it, that we're kind of at that somewhat unfortunate spot here, unless we really get rowdy, where I think he's going to be at 4 because he's already sat at about 2.75 off of his two majors. If you've got something spicy for me and you want to push him up towards 4.5 with like a 1.75 on this one, I'd love to hear it, but I kind of feel like this is going to leave us right around that 4 mark as a 1.3, 1.4 majors sort of ordeal. But curious to hear if you feel differently.
Yeah, no, I think this is, you know, obviously it's Birkdale. So I would, you know, I think Birkdale was proper test that week. Obviously not to the level of the previous one where Podrick won, but, you know, epic duel with Kuchar. I think there was probably, you know, I'm throwing Spieth a pace of play penalty in there, but he still won by 3. I thought the stuff around the Titleist truck on you know, their kind of middle of the round was, you know, he was slow playing the hell out of Kuchar. You know, possible alignment aid there as well, you know, over on the driving range and kind of wild that wasn't OB either. So But no, that was one of the most fun majors, I think, of our lifetimes. I think, you know, crazy, like Cao Tong Lee shot 63 in the final round as well. But yeah, I think Jordan, you know, they were tied really all the way going up to like into 14, and then Jordan kind of started to pull away, you know, on 15 there, Eagles 15. So, yeah, I think, you know, good leaderboard, Rory T4, Koepka, Leish. You know, I would say, yeah, this one's probably slightly above one major, but like you said, anything we do, you know, he's going to be right there around four majors, which feels right.
So let's do just a quick, I don't think it's going to change the four majors, but let's just do a quick calculation on this one for kind of the inputs. I think it being at Birkdale, British Open, like it's a full major just purely off of that. But the other inputs, we gave him the slow play penalty for 13. So that's minus what, minus 0.1?
Well, I think, like yeah, that. But I think that's more just factoring into the final leaderboard. Like he won by three, but he's still going to win by one if you give him a 2-shot slow play penalty.
Right.
So I think that's kind of factored into, you know, the margin of victory there. So
okay.
I don't think that's necessarily docking him any points.
Okay. So nothing there. What is, so then what do we add based on Michael? You can't stand there. I mean, that was absolutely iconic. Michael up on top of the hill. I think that's probably point one, point two, something yeah. like that. And then of yeah. course, go get that. I mean, that's like point two or point three for my money. Those are a couple of the most iconic moments we've had in the last 20 years in majors. So I think with those
only
couple
guy in
inputs,
the field. Yeah, only guy in the field to shoot all four rounds in the 60s, which I think yeah. is always a strong, you know, feather in your cap.
I mean, this one to me, it can get as high as 1.5, but again, like it's not going to do a whole lot on it. He needs 1.8, 1.9 out of this one to get him up to five yeah. majors rounding, which it was a great major. It wasn't that. So he's a four major guy, and I think kind of right on it. I think there's more to come. You know, we've been enduring a lot of shit from Spieth, but he's going to be there. So I'm yeah. looking forward to seeing that number go up, but he's a four major man as of right now.
I like it.
All right, down to the two line. We've got five guys. We'll go a little bit quicker through these. I think hopefully people are somewhat enjoying what we've got going here, but getting a little long in the tooth.
And knowing too on Spieth, like the 2015 St. Andrews, that's the one that I wish
yeah,
that he was had painful. Back. That you know, painful. Finishing one shot outside that playoff there that Zach Johnson ends up unfortunately winning.
We'd have some residual conversations going on here. We might have to change things up at the top of the leaderboard here a little bit, but as we get down to the twos, because some of these guys have been the beneficiaries of some of that junk. Yeah. But anyway, let's start with Cabrera, two majors. So this is an interesting one to me because he's a guy that has like only shown up a handful of times, which is interesting, but 07 Oakmont US Open over the cat. I mean, that's salty stuff. So how do you feel about that one?
Yeah. I mean, Oakmont's Oakmont. That's the deal. Right. And, I'd probably give him more points as well, just for, he doesn't win. I think his Greenbrier win in 2014 really marred, his overall record of, you know, only winning majors. But, you know, bunch of like he'd had a bunch of top tens kind of prior, the Oakmont year, it was just kind of, God, the cat and, you know, over Furyk too. What a win that would have been for Furyk, just from a kind of local guy doing right. Nicholas Fast in there. David Toms, Bubba Watson, Nick Doherty, last from the past. I think, you know, final round 69. Yeah, just kind of a rock solid major. I think that's kind of like your quintessential, you know, like Tiger finishes T2. I think that's like your quintessential, like 1.4, 1.5, like big dick US Open win, right? Yeah,
I'm very much with you there. Where I'm going to shake out is, and this will make sense as we go along, because the Masters has to be situated properly. I'm going to put him right on 1.4 for that one. Because,
okay.
Yeah, you've got the cat. I love the fact that he only shows up when it matters. I mean, I've watched him play a few times, and like he truly could not care less when he's playing in a regular PGA Tour event, which in his case is kind of sick, opposite of Brooks. But anyway, so 1.4 on that one. Now the Masters.
And it's, you know, at a plus five, you know, winning score too, which is just.
Right, which is awesome.
That's aspirational, yeah.
So Masters 09 in the playoff with Kenny Perry and Chad Campbell, if I'm not mistaken. So that feels a little soft to me. You know, it's a Masters. And so as we've discussed, like, you can't really not get a full major off the Masters. But to me, that's as close to like a single-ish Masters, maybe a shade above it, as you're going to get. But where the Masters becomes complex to me is the fact that he then gets in the playoff once again in 2013 with Adam Scott. So like, fully substantiates the two majors before, the prior Masters victory. But then everyone, maybe not everyone, but I think a lot of people were ready to see Adam Scott win a major, someone from Australia win the Masters. It felt like Cabrera, just like, he did the right thing to provide us some excitement. The shot on 18 was just awesome. San Vuele with it in the air, hits it to like 2 feet, gets into the playoff, but then loses as he was supposed to. Like, what I want to do with him here is say, like, he kind of has nearly two Masters and the one US Open. I think he's a three guy, probably rounding down just slightly. Because I love the fact that he got in that playoff to validate the first one, but then he lost it. You know, I don't think that the playoff outcome was really going to change a whole lot, but I feel better about the fact that he lost it.
I can get down with that. I think that I'm probably more rounding up for him on the, you know, doing 1.4 for the US Open, and then, you know, probably a 1.0 for the Masters victory, but then bumping that up to like 1.2 or 1.3.
Okay. Just,
you know, knowing what he did after the fact. Kenny Perry was like on a heater. I mean, Kenny Perry was really, I think people forget how freaking good Kenny Perry was too. And Chad Campbell for that matter as well. Shingo Katayama, you know, on the leaderboard there, but like Mickelson finishes fifth, Tiger finishes T6, right? So, you know, they're both in the mix. They're both right there. So you got to kind of, you know, give some points there of like both those guys are on the first page of the leaderboard. Tiger giving chase shoots 68, Mickelson shoots 67, Cabrera shoots final round 71, which is just kind of solid down the stretch. So yeah, I think he had given away a few shots, like he was two over through the first nine, and then plays the back nine in minus two after a bogey on 10. So, you know, I think feels like Cabrera's won more than two majors. And I feel like that kind of validates that feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, it's three, some great majors. He's only contended in a few, but he was able to win them, which is awesome. And so he's a three major guy. That's where I feel like he should be.
Almost to the point where, like, you know, you kind of feel like he's won like another US Open even. Like I conflate him with, I'm like, oh yeah, like he's played well at Pinehurst before. Like, no, he hasn't played well in any of the Pinehurst ones. But like, it feels like he's been, you know, he's been there, he's been in the mix, and you almost just like default him into
right
certain majors that he wasn't even involved in.
He's like toying with us, but yeah, he's a three major guy. So to our next two, Bubba, two Masters. Oh. The first one iconic, you know, the shot out of the trees. You know, the playoff with Oosthuizen. You know, that was probably because of that shot. Like, I think we can give him a little more than 1.2. The second one is like, yes, it's cool to win another Masters. As we've discussed, like a Masters cannot be much less than a single major. But it's like doing it again, a golf course that was literally built for the guy. I don't know what happened, who did it, but like that ball on 13 on Sunday in the 2014 Masters that flew over the trees, like, something happened there. That was a simulation of a golf hole. So
yeah,
it's like, I feel like we're looking at like a kind of a 1.25 plus 0.9-ish sort of situation. He's a shade over two or right around two, but he's not rounding up or down off of two to me.
I think that's one too where Mickelson absolutely gagged that one away. Hits it in the trees on four, and you know, makes triple. Mickelson's playing with Peter Hansen, who is just dog shit all day. He shoots 73. I mean, I'm not willing to give him more than one for this one. It was Bubba, you know, played fine, won it, shot 68 on Sunday. But again, yeah, like you said, it you know, I think there's a certain somebody threw that ball back in off the you know, on 13 there, and yeah, the place is tailor made for him. I think it's just a solid one.
Yeah, I'm with you. So you think for the two wins, you give him one major?
I think he's just solid too. Like the second one that he won, what was that, 2014?
Yeah.
Yeah, that one, I mean, you know, you're kind of bummed because it's like Spieth's involved and you want, you know, but then again, like he shoots, Watson shoots 69, which I think was like one of the low rounds of the day. Or I guess Yost Luton shot 67, but not a whole lot of like super low rounds on that Sunday. And, you know, Spieth just didn't get it done, shot 72 on Sunday. So that one was kind of like, you know, he had a 3-shot lead. Like nobody did anything the last 5, 6, 7 holes. Like he had a 3-shot lead pretty much all the way through on the back nine there. And it was kind of like, he just held on to it. It was pretty stock. So yeah, I'm saying, I think that one's like right around one as well. I think he's just a solid 2-major guy.
Yeah, I agree. 2 majors. Martin
and
Keimer.
Then he's got the one as well. Like the PGA Championship. Was that the DJ at Whistling Straits?
Yeah, he was in there.
Yeah, but again, I don't think there's any reason why he should have been in there in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, based on that. So I don't think we need to factor that in.
Yeah. So let's skip Keimer for the moment. We'll finish with him and DJ.
Okay.
Let's go to ZJ first. So this is we've had this conversation. We've taken this offline before. A Masters and a British Open at St. Andrews, which is like kind of an asterisk. Like to me, that feels like at face value, it's like 2 majors. However, being over Spieth, just so much going on. So I'm going to let you start with this one.
Yeah, I feel like this is kind of why we're having this conversation in the first place, right? He's kind of the poster child for this conversation. So, yeah, the Masters. Let's start there. What was this? 2007, I think.
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, 71, 73, 76, 69. Like the entire field showed this week. I know it was just the runner-ups, three guys at T2, Retief, Rory Sabatini, and Tiger Woods at +3. Tiger eagles 13, pars his last 4 or 5 holes after that, and you know, gets to +3, but can't get anywhere past that. You know, ZJ played really well. He bogeyed his first hole, and then he was like 4 under par from there the rest of the way home. You got to give him some credit there. I don't know. I have trouble with this Masters. It doesn't feel like a real Masters. It doesn't feel like I'm more in like, this is a PGA Championship, you know, and I know that that doesn't fit in with like the scoring. The scoring was tougher, but it's kind of like a hang on for dear life Masters versus a go and get it and win it Masters. I'm like, this is like a 0.8 to me.
Okay. So I think that puts us in a pretty good spot for like, for certain players, say it was Cat. I think if you put together a Masters and a British Open at St. Andrews, like you could be convincing me of 4 majors, but just with the way that it happened with ZJ, somehow he finagled his way into it just being a square 2. Like I think 0.8 for the Masters and 1.2 ish, because I think Spieth gets some of that value off of that British Open. Like he was chasing the Grand Slam. He was right there. I love ZJ. I think he's an awesome dude, but No one wanted him to win that thing. Everyone was rooting for Spieth. No. And he just went and took it, you know, and what his boy, the caddy, Damon Green does his chicken dance. And it's like, no, we wanted iconic Spieth and Greller on 18 doing something just like amazing. And instead we get chicken dance and Mr. Iowa.
Eating corn out of the claret jug. Very, very
disgraceful.
Like, there's some residual, you know, docking of points, just even from the stuff that happened immediately following the major win. So I think there's a certain, and really even going back to the Masters, like people point to, you know, he didn't go for any of the par fives, but he got up and down, however, you know, 11 times on, like, basically birdied 11 of the 16 par fives that week with wedge in his hand. And it's like, yeah, but that also speaks to, like, you know, it was so soggy that you didn't have to worry about controlling your spin or anything like that. It was just like a dart fest. So
yeah, it's like antithetical to what the Masters, like, what usually differentiates people. So I'm
with you. But yeah, to St. Andrews, I think, you know, ZJ shoots 66 in the final round. Leishman shoots 64-66 on the weekend to sneak into the playoff. The fact that, you know, Mark didn't birdie 18, I think that was, it was there for the taking for him. Day finishing one shot out of the playoff as well. Pars 18, Jordan pars 18. I don't know. I struggle with this one because I think this was prior to some of the rules changes. There's some video floating around out there of ZJ tapping down spike marks throughout the final round as well. Allegedly. So yeah, I'm calling this one, based on all the Damon Green bullshit, based on the corn and the claret jug, based on what happened in the playoffs. Did he, they played 1, 2, 17, and 18?
Yeah, I remember just being disappointing. It was like, it was just disappointing.
Yeah, Leish birdies or bogeys the first hole in the playoff. Somehow ZJ, Louis both birdie. DJ birdies 2 as well. Bogeys the road hole. They all bogey the road hole. And then, they all par 18. He wins the playoff by one over Oosthuizen. I don't know. I struggle with this one. So we gave him 0.8. I'm almost to the point where, like, do we need to give him 0.65, so he's a one major guy? Or is it he's won a Masters and an Open at the old course. Typically that would count for like three total, and so you're basically just giving him, you're like rounding him up to two, so you're giving him like 0.9 or something for this.
So here's where I'm at. I like where your head is at with the 0.65, because that puts us in a double rounding situation. I don't think it's possible with a Masters and a claret jug at the old course to not have at least two majors, but somehow ZJ put himself in this funky predicament where it feels right to say 0.8, 0.65, 1.45 if my math is correct. We'll double round that up to 1.5 and then two. That kind of feels right for ZJ.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. Right. I think we're, ZJ can't get mad at us. We're not shortchanging him. You're still getting your two majors, but we're just going to have a say in kind of how that happened. You gotta work just to get to two.
Right? An asterisk and an underline, maybe italicized as well, something like that. Okay. Now this is where things get interesting. These two are like very different, but like they come together in a funky sort of way. So we've got Martin Kaymer and we've got DJ. So let's get off the record, the 14. Well, we need to go chronologically, I guess. So let's start with the 2012 PGA. At Whistling Straits. So we've got the whole bunker situation. I don't know where you shake out on that. I frankly don't have like a fully fleshed out opinion about the whole deal. I think DJ's an idiot, so it's not surprising that that's kind of what happened, but I also think it's kind of bullshit at the same time. Keimer never should have necessarily been there to me. At least DJ didn't make the putt. That would have been absolutely disastrous. Yeah. If he makes it, thinks he wins. I think he actually said that. I guess he was able to do the math, surprisingly. But yeah, a lot going on here. You mentioned Bubba before. Frankly, I think that that's like completely ancillary here. Like,
yes,
he was there, and like the leaderboard would show that he was in that playoff. But realistically, like, that didn't actually happen. So, curious to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I think you're a little bit too down on DJ's intelligence. I think DJ is actually very, very, very smart in his own way. He's operating on a higher plane of efficiency, and just he gives a shit about the stuff that he wants to give a shit about. I'm not a Whistling Straits guy. I don't think Whistling Straits. I just don't like it. I don't think it's. I think it's a fake, like aerial links. So yeah, I don't know what to do with that one. It's kind of in that Valhalla camp, right? Where it's, you know, decent major, but it's a little bit flawed as far as it's like in that just solid 0.75, kind of from the start there. And then considering everything that happened, I would give Keimer like 0.5 or 0.6 for that one.
That's what I was going to say. It's like encroaching on the double triple round sort of camp, but nonetheless, like, it's like a half. I think he gets about a half one there. And DJ, you know, DJ probably inherits, you know, 0.2, 0.3 out of that, something along those lines. And then 14 US Open for Keimer. I mean, look, the back-to-back US Opens, Pinehurst, I think, is awesome. I mean, anyone who's listened to the tie before knows that I love Pinehurst. I think it's an unbelievable golf course. I thought it was really cool. It was kind of people getting to see what they'd done with that place. But then he won by a million. You know, he was putting the ball all week. You had like Ricky way up on the board. Eric Compton was right there. It was just it was a weird US Open. And like, now on one hand, it's all credit to him. Like, he went out and just took the thing. But it also was like one of the most disappointing US Opens of all time because he just ran away with the thing. And it felt like by about Thursday afternoon, it was like, is anyone going to catch the dude? And it was just like, it was such a shitty major because of what he did with it. And so I don't know if that means he should get seven majors or if it means he should get like 0.1. But there's a lot going on.
Yeah, the 65-65 jumping out, 6-shot lead over Brendan Todd, heading into the third round there. And then, you know, Eric Compton, Ricky, T2 there. Both of them finished T2. 8-shot win. I don't think Pinehurst was like totally grown in yet either. I think they made a lot of those changes. And, you know, the native wasn't really like, it wasn't really the quarter shot penalty that they wanted it to be. It seemed like there was just a lot of, you know, it didn't factor in quite as much. Like, you had the whip, but there wasn't necessarily the downside risk there. And then I think it seems like they started mowing it a little bit differently around the greens so that you can't just roll putter everywhere. You got to worry about some grain coming down at you, or it's a little bit slower on some of those surrounds to where you have to, you know, you kind of have to make a decision, and you know, trying to hit like a bump and run is maybe a little bit more rewarded than say putting it. So, but again, it was a masterful performance. You know, ball striking as well. He hit the shit out of his irons, boy, too. But it was just, yeah, it was one of those majors where like you're kind of unfulfilled watching it because nothing bad is going to happen, right? It's like, you know, unless he gets plugged in the face of a bunker, like he's not going to lose a ball. There's really nowhere to get in trouble off the tee. And so like once you sprint out to that lead, it's kind of like, all right, it is what it is, right? The thing's baked after 36 holes. So, I'm going to probably give that a full major just because I think he went and won it on Thursday, Friday. And it's U.S. Open at Pinehurst. And I think having to sleep on the lead for, you know, 3 days in a row, is there something to be said for that? And, you know, he got the 0.5 0.4 or 0.5 for the first major. I think this is, it's only right to give him something because like he won this thing unequivocally without any sort of debate, kind of like the opposite of his previous major.
So how about this? I'm of the mind that we go 0.5 on the first one, okay. 0.9 at the US Open. I can't quite dock him all the way down to one. Guy.
Okay. Yeah.
So, no, but what I want to do is throw him like 0.1 or 0.2 for the players. He ends up winning a players championship as well.
Wow.
Because I think that means a little something. That's kind of validation. I'm not like a fifth major sort of guy at all. However, I am. But
I mean, you are. Too.
Well, let's throw that out. So let's go 0.2 off of that. To take him from 1-4 to like the 1-6 he needs to round a 2. That's kind of where I'm at with Keimer.
I mean, the players, you know, now you're throwing in all sorts of Keimer's record at the players is crazy because he doesn't have any other top 10s there. I mean, talking players, now we're talking, do we have to revisit like Rory? You know, Rory's one of players.
Yeah, that in March though, that's is just weird.
Phil's one of players. You know, do we have to revisit any of these other guys? No.
It does get complex, but yeah, I mean there aren't that many that I'm seeing here. I don't think it makes a huge difference. Yeah, I mean he's however you shake it, I think Keimer comes in right around 1.5 and rounds to 2. That's just where he is in the world. So
I can get down with it too, because I think, you know, Keimer's won a lot of national opens, which I respect. He's won the BMW International, which is like the German Open. He's won the Scottish Open. He's won the KLM Open, which is the Dutch Open. Won the Dunhill before. You know, those are some big dick tournaments in my opinion. So yeah, I'm fine giving his body of work kind of a, that like kind of body of work push there.
Yeah, I'm with you. Okay, DJ, how about DJ. You take us on this one.
God, this is a wild ride. Yeah, I mean it's a sea of yellow on on the Wikipedia page for DJ. You know, of course you got like the US Open at Pebble where he shoots what 82 in the final round. You know, you've got the deal at Whistling Straits, you've got the T2 at 2011 at the Open Championship, T4 at the US Open in 14, you know, T6, T2, T7 in 2015 in some of the majors, T2 What was the 2015 US Open? What was that one?
Chambers.
2015 US Open. Okay. Oh, that's, oh, I'm like blanking. Okay. So yeah. So really gets us to 2016 Oakmont. To me, like this is the epitome of, this is like two majors in and of itself. I think he's getting some credit for
at least.
Yeah, like, and just like the bullshit that they put him through during the round with the, you know, the whole oscillating ball thing. You know, not the strongest leaderboard that he beat, like, you know, beat Shane Lowry. You know, you got Furyk, but like Piercy, Brandon Grace, nah, like Summer Hayes was up there. But, you know, 67, 69, 71, 69 at Oakmont, and the 69 with a, that was with the penalty as well, right?
That's correct.
So, yeah. So I think, you know, and just them telling him in the middle of the round there on the fifth green, it's just a whole, it was crazy. So wins by three. I think that's, you know, that birdie that he made on 18, just to kind of put the exclamation point on it. I think those are just like two of the best golf shots ever hit before. I think like that was one of the best holes ever played in the history of golf. That birdie. So
honestly, with on that green, like gutting that putt, I know it was like 3 feet, but like that's a horrifying place to putt the golf ball, and that was impressive. Just that itself.
Yeah. So I think,
TC, I'm frankly here to argue that that needs to round a three majors with like that whole, the slow playing thing, you know, him having to sit on that for a handful of holes out there, everything that had happened before that. Like I kind of want to get behind the whole, you know, 2.5, 2.6, 2.7. Like I think that Oakmont major should round a three.
You are not going to get any sort of argument from me on that. I think I am all for that.
So and then where I want to take it from there, honestly,
because I feel like you're gonna dock his fall major.
We got some funkiness coming. Yes,
his fall masters. Yeah.
So let's start at the end and say, I think he's a round down to three sort of guy, which is why I want to say about 2.6 off of Oakmont. And then, although we've said that the Masters is at least kind of one, you know, we had organic matter on the golf balls out there, played in November. Like, come on. It was just, it wasn't really a real Masters to me. You know, 0.6, 0.7. He was like, you know, 63 under par or something like that for the week. So it puts him up there over three. And, you know, the record shows that he's only at two, but it's not four. If it were a standard Masters, like I could get behind DJ being around like 2.7 at Oakmont, 1.0 for a Masters rounding to four. But I think being the fall Masters, it's like 0.6, and that puts him at around 3.3, rounds down to three. That feels about like where he should be.
Are we giving him anything for A, for whistling, and B, for the 2019 Masters, where he seemingly did the right thing in the face
you
of
know,
the cat?
You're right. Okay. I can, with those two inputs, let's just bake those into the 2020 Masters. I can get in with 2.6 off the US Open, and then one on top of it, 3.6, and that puts him at four. Does that sound pretty equitable?
He feels like a four major guy to me, between all the, you know, all the sea of yellow that I'm looking at.
It is a sea of yellow. Yes. It's it's good stuff.
You know, plus he's a two-time Saudi International winner, the Bonesaw Invitational.
Yeah.
Which, you know, could be a future major at the rate things are going, right?
Well, like we discussed earlier, I mean, these live events could all in and of themselves become majors, you know. There's a lot to look forward to out there. So anyway, that let's go back down the board here. So we started at a 6-4-3-2. Mickelson with six, Rory and Brooks at four, Spieth, Harrington three, and then the two line being Cabrera, Bubba, Keimer, ZJ, and DJ. We've now put us at eight for Mickelson, four for Rory, Spieth, and DJ, three for Harrington, Brooks, and Cabrera, and two for Bubba, Keimer, and ZJ. I think that we've done good work here. I mean, we could kind of go down the line of all the people that ever won majors and figure it out. I mean, there's a name that sticks out to me, like Jason Day. Although he only has the one PGA, it felt like his name came up like four times, to where honestly that major that he actually won, that's only worth like half of it. But like, he kind of has two majors, you know, just with like residual value off of like 8 or 10 different majors. So there's all sorts of stuff going on in this conversation, but
I would say Day, you know, 0.5 or 0.6, but then it gets him up to the one or a little bit above one, where he's firmly at one. You got to dock him for some of the vertigo stuff at Chambers.
That's
you know,
true.
Kind of the performance art stuff there. Some of the choke jobs as well. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think there's, you know, this is something I think we revisit in the future too, because I think there's some guys out there where we could probably do a whole one of these based on whose record is vastly overstated in history and go all the way back, you know, go way, way back. It's tougher to do because we don't really remember, like we weren't alive for stuff, you know, kind of pre 90s really. I was born in 86. You were probably born in like,
97.
Okay. So yeah.
Not
so,
too
so
bad.
Yeah. I was going to say it's kind of wild when people were born in the 2000s, but, oh, totally. But yeah, so I think there's probably, some more stuff we could do in the 90s as far as, looking at some of those guys as well. But yeah, it's an interesting conversation to be had, because I think, A, it's like, how do you assess close calls? How do you assess playoff losses? How do you assess, kind of choke jobs? And then also, how do you assess, kind of backing into a major as well? When another guy kind of loses it versus you kind of go out and win it. So
totally. TC, we'll make it an annual deal. Each year after the major season, we'll kind of,
I love it,
take stock of the world, figure out where we're at, get our heads about us, and we'll get together and figure out where some people are at. We'll come up with a whole new list of players, unless someone really needs to be updated here, and we'll keep it rolling, because there's a lot of good conversation to be had.
Love it. And also, just I'll keep marinating on the players wrinkle, yeah, that you added in, yeah, there as well. So
it's worth tracking. And of course, the live situation. I mean, we don't know what could happen there. Those could be worth majors. They're going to be worth double majors. There's no telling. So we will keep everybody posted. We'll be back for more on this, and enjoyed version one. TC, I appreciate you joining me. This is a great conversation.
Thanks for having me. Also, I feel like we got to do Tiger next time. Like, just go all the way to the Tigers major record.
Yeah, and that might be one episode.
That would be a whole episode in of itself.
Yeah, yeah. We'll get there. We'll do Tiger. That'll be a great one. So, all right, TC, appreciate it.
Good stuff. Thanks, Henry.